Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What do you do when the unexpected hits your life? The answer for one parent, call for friendly backup, is played out on Council of Dads, NBC's new drama hour starting next Tuesday. Executive producer Tony Phelan and Joan Rader join me next in an internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles. A new all-star season of Top Chef begins on Bravo Thursday night, with 15 former contestants reuniting in Los Angeles to cook and win $250,000, a.k.a. a quarter of a million. Gear up for a preview with executive producer Dean Arquinez next half hour. Also ahead, the latest coronavirus developments impacting television and our classic trivia question. Hey, everyone, I'm Conan Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a trio of great audiobooks when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later on in the program. Good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon, a half hour earlier than usual, on the program All About Television. 45 degrees at the bottom of the hour here in New York. A little bit of an overcast kind of day. Some clouds here and there in the New York metro area. But we're delighted to have you with us. Some good guests coming away in the hour and change ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are. Catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about using the phone, no problem with us, because we got a chat room for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. That's televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you're interactive with us. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or speakers, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions of Disney Live with you. Our guest from NBC's new drama, Council of Dads, that premieres next Tuesday night, will be with us from L.A. after these news notes. The assortment of original scripted series suspending production due to the coronavirus continues on the rise this afternoon. Amazon's full line of originals, including Megasaga's Lord of the Rings and The Wheel in Time, are taking the pause, whether filming in New York, New Zealand, in Lord of the Rings' case, or elsewhere. At Hulu, four-season episode work on The Handmaid's Tale is on hold, so is season two of Netflix's hit The Witcher, produced overseas in England. On the other hand, the National Football League will proceed with its annual draft in Las Vegas, taking place April 23rd to the 25th. However, all public events in Las Vegas connected with the event are canceled. ESPN, ABC, and the NFL Network are set to cover the 2020 draft. Now, a couple of quickies for you. Reloaded episodes of the Peabody Award-winning series Good Eats resume on Cooking Channel April 13th, hosted by Alton Brown. And tonight is the late night for ABC to flip start times for Jimmy Kimmel Live and ABC News Nightline. Nightline will now play at 11:35 in Eastern Time, its original time period, with Kimmel on a half hour later. For the immediate future, ABC News will devote Nightline's focus to the coronavirus developments all over the place. Again, it'll be Nightline on 11:35 or whenever your late night on ABC starts, in the local ABC station, and Jimmy Kimmel follows a half hour later, East Coast time, 12:05 a.m. And that is news notes for today. All right, we are awaiting the twosome behind the brand new NBC series Council of Dads. It's an unusual kind of human drama. It deals with a father who has a health scare, and because of it, he decides to give his party of five the opportunity to have some backup dads in their lives. The program, by the way, is based on a best-selling book by the author Bruce Feller, and the cast includes Sarah Wayne Collis, Clive Stannon, Tom Everett Scott, Jarvis Richards, Blue Chapman, whole cast of great people here. In addition, the program is produced by one of the key people behind CSI, Jerry Bruckheimer, Jonathan Littman, and Christiane Reed, who used to work on Lucifer and CBI Cyber, Universal Television Production, along with Jerry Bruckheimer Television and Midwest Livestock Productions. The executive producers, Tony Phelan and Joan Rader, are going to be live from Los Angeles any moment now. Apparently, they're having some issues with communicating with us, but as soon as I see they're ready to go, we will get them on. So I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's do our classic trivia question of the week. And then as soon as I see that Tony and Joan are ready to go, we will put them on. So get out your thinking caps, folks, because we're about to offer our classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, you can win an excellent book on the front lines of the television war, Legendary War Cameraman in Vietnam by Yasushi Tony Hiroshiki, who was on this program when this book was released about 3 years ago. The editor is Terry Irving, who is also on our program. And the introduction is by the original moderator of ABC's Nightline, Ted Koppel. It's a terrific book dealing with the Vietnam War cameraman and what he had to deal with covering that incredible scene in North and South Vietnam. And you can win that book if you know the answer to this question that we first posed a week ago. What was the Dick Van Dyke Show's original name? That's right. The Dick Van Dyke Show did not start out life as the Dick Van Dyke Show. When Carl Reiner created the series, he actually made a pilot under another name, with him as the star. And that's what we want to know. What was the name, the original name, of the Dick Van Dyke Show? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you are emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win on the front lines of the television war. Once again, that question, what was the Dick Van Dyke Show's original name? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you are emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win on the front lines of the television war. And we'll try to repeat the question before we leave you today. If not, we'll have it for you first thing tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Incidentally, we will continue to keep our classic trivia segment in play because the post office is open. That's right, post offices around the country are open despite the coronavirus situation. So as long as they're open, we will continue to bring our classic trivia question in play. So make sure you get involved. Make this the week that you get involved. We're going, by the way, for our third weekly winner in 4 weeks. Again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And again, if we don't have the question for you again before the end of the program, we'll post tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. So however you get in, and all the very best. And now joining us live from Los Angeles are the developers and executive producers of Council of Dad, coming next week on NBC, Tony Phelan and Joan Rader. Tony and Joan, welcome in.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hello, great to have both of you. And Joan, we'll start with you. How did this program get off the ground? Who read the book first?
So NBC had fallen in love with the book. They had found the book and the author, Bruce Feiler, who had written this book about his own life experience when he was diagnosed with a very serious cancer. And as a way of dealing with his mortality, he created a group of men from various parts of his life to help raise his children should he die. NBC approached us. They had really, they thought it was a really interesting concept about community and people, you know, helping other people in really difficult situations. And we liked the idea as well, and we read the book, and we loved it.
Tony, what about the book and about the situation, this very unique idea of having backup dads to be part of your family, your nuclear family, that intrigued both of you to think, you know what, this could make a good series, and we want to develop it this way?
Well, we had been looking for a way to talk about our family on a show. Joan and I worked on Grey's Anatomy for 10 years, and ran it for 4, and we just, you know, we thought we had a kind of an interesting family, and this idea really struck us. I think we all, everyone shares this idea of what happens should something happen to me? What would happen to my kids? And I think the idea of the fact that the traditional nuclear family, as it kind of came to be in the 60s, it is no longer really almost anyone's family. Family now in America is a variety of things, and the idea that you have to lean on the people around you who you might not be biologically related to help you raise your family and to help kind of be that support system for you, I think is something that everybody we'll find a way into. I think that the show has a great reach that way.
It also sounds, Joe, like this is the kind of a program that could be semi-anthology in nature, because you have a group of dads, or council in this case, as opposed to one backup dad. You could have an episode which focuses on one of these backups or two of these backups, another one that deals with none of them but deals with Scott, the main character, and his relationship to his family. It just seems that there's a lot of flexibility
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. We've always felt that these dads were sort of called upon to help this family, but the fact is the family is impacting these guys' lives at the same time, and these guys have stuff going on in their own lives. For instance, one of them is estranged from his adult children because he was a terrible dad due to alcoholism. Another another is one of the mom's best friends, and he's deciding whether or not he and his partner want to adopt another kid. So helping this family will impact these dads. And
the other thing that's exciting about it too is that the dads, I think, are really surprised at the ways that they connect to the kids in different ways. Because in the case of Robin, our mom and kind of the central character of the show, she's the head of the council, but she's got five kids, and each of those kids has different needs. And having these guys around, she resists it initially, but she finds ultimately it's helpful.
And by the way, that's a very interesting twist, that you would think that would be the father that would be the head of the council rather than the mother.
Well, the dad, you know, so here's the deal. Tom Everett Scott plays Scott Perry, and he is the guy who gets sick in our show. And unlike the guy in real life, Bruce Feiler, who survived his terrible illness, our dad does not survive. And what he says when he proposes this idea of a council to his wife, she's like, no way, I don't need these guys sort of intruding on our lives. And he says, well, you're going to be the head of the council. They sort of work at your discretion. And that's sort of the premise. And then the idea is that they all become, you know, really integral parts of the family. Scott says, you know, in these letters he writes to the dads before he dies, he says, I'm not asking you to love my family the way I do, but my guess is after a year you will. And that's exactly what happens. You know, and people have asked us if this is some aspirational idea, you know, is this even real? Could this really happen? And the truth is, for me, it is aspirational, but in a way, like, I think that we need community. I mean, you know, we can see it now. We need to be able to rely on one another and really, you know, pitch in and help in difficult times. And this show is showing exactly how a family goes through that.
We're talking about Council of Dads. It's NBC's new drama series that premieres next Tuesday night following the season finale of This Is Us. It's 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local NBC station. And we've got the two key producers and writers of the show. They're executive producers Tony Fallon and Joe Rader. Before they did this, they worked for over a decade on Grey's Anatomy, the last four involved in that series as executive producers. And they're with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tony, I'm coming live from New York. Thank you for joining us wherever you may be. Hope that you are safe and sound wherever you are on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio, also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Tony and Joan, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Tuesday, there's a brand new venture starting called Ribbit TV. It may become a new way for TV series to not only get on the air, but get on the air with viewer funding. On Friday, we will talk to its co-founder and chief executive officer, Wade Bradley. We're also waiting on one, possibly two possible guests, for some very interesting shows coming up, one on Hulu, the other on Netflix. So be sure to tune in. That's Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Rivet TV, and one or two other possible big guests coming your way exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. At our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Tell me, how much of experiences either you or people you know or Joan knew come into the series?
Well, it's interesting you ask that because in our family, we have a daughter who's adopted from China, and our son is trans. So those two ideas were certainly woven into the story. But we are, from our time on Grey's Anatomy, big fans of inviting the actors into the writer's room and talking to them about their characters and also about their personal lives, as well as the personal lives of the writers who write the shows. So you kind of get this great big stew of people's personal experiences in terms of parenthood and dealing with their own parents and also what it means to lose someone and how difficult it is to recover from that, both as a parent, as a kid, and as a spouse.
But basically the answer to the question is we are mining our personal life. Mining our poor children's personal lives. We're mining the writers. Like, you better not tell me anything because it will end up on TV.
How difficult was the casting to make sure you had, you know, different actors play the different type of dads that are featured here?
Well, it's interesting. We really did want to show a variety of dads. You know, one is different generations, different parts of Scott's life. And in terms of difficulty, it wasn't difficult because we had such great choices. There is an actor, Michael O'Neill, who played an arc on Grey's Anatomy, who we knew instantly was going to be Larry, the older dad who Scott knew from AA. And, you know, so we just, you know, it's sort of like anything. You know it when you see it. And Clive Sandin was a person we'd been a fan of for a long time. He's from the show Vikings, and he had been on Taken on NBC, and he just brings this great energy. And then J. August Richards, we had also worked on Grey's Anatomy. He played a young Richard Weber. For us, the one of the best to cast was the mom, Robin, and Sarah Wayne Callies just brings this real sort of groundedness and likability, and so she was our, like, God, could we get Sarah Wayne Callies? And then we ended up getting her. So that was a real coup for us.
Tony, you're going on with a great advantage because the season finale of This Is Us is going to precede you next Tuesday. Was This Is Us and its style of presenting human drama, was that an inspiration anyway to how you did, you and Joan did Council of Dads?
Absolutely, because I think that what This Is Us really showed us was that there was an appetite for telling human family stories on network television. And, you know, there's a long history of wonderful shows that did that. Friday Night Lights and Parenthood, and going back even further, shows like Family. We think that this show is in that tradition. And I think that one of the things that makes this show a little different is that there's humor on the show as well. You know, we really, coming from Grey's, that's such a big part of that show, and we feel like in our own lives, even in the worst of times, you have to have some kind of sense of humor about things, as dark as they may be or as serious as they may be, and so that's a big part of the show as well. I think that people will both find really heartfelt drama, but a lot of comedy and a lot of fun too. Like life.
Joan, it's also interesting because I mentioned before you came on, Jerry Bruckheimer is one of the executive producers. When we know him from television, we know him from such things as the groundbreaking procedural CSI, or if you know him from film, you know him from movies like Flashdance, Top Gun, etc. You don't necessarily equate Bruckheimer with a show like this. And I'm wondering if this program has tapped something new with him and you're working with him.
Well, you know, I think that, look, whatever that company does is quality. And I think that it's I know from working with Bruckheimer people that this is a real a love affair project. They just love working on this, you know, these character dramas, and it is a bit of a departure, but they're like quality all the way, and their sort of sense of casting. I mean, Jerry was really involved. He has a real knack for casting, you know, and, you know, they've just been unbelievable partners in.
I think the other thing, too, is that, you know, one of our favorite Bruckheimer shows is Amazing Race. And the drama that they managed to create on Amazing Race and mine from people's real experiences in the moment is fantastic. So their knowledge of the whole process of how to put together a quality television show has been incredibly helpful.
We're speaking with Tony Fallon and Joe Rader. They are the developers, the key writers, and executive producers of Council of Dads, the brand-new NBC series that premieres a week from Tuesday, 10 p.m. Pacific time in your local NBC station, right after the season finale of This Is Us. Tony and Joe are with us live from Los Angeles. Happy you are with us as well, wherever you may be listening on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio, as well as TuneIn Radio, because this is the promo about television. Tomorrow we'll be televised. Simon Applebaum here with you. If you have a question or comment, our remaining moments with Tony and Joan, don't be shy. Make your move, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to stay in Los Angeles, and we're going to speak with one of the executive producers of the popular Bravo series Top Chef, which has an all-stars edition premiering this Thursday night, where 15 former contestants are going to do kitchen battle for $250,000. Janine Martinez will join us live from L.A. after the top of the hour, so stay tuned wherever you may be. Tony and Joan, you both came from Grey's Anatomy. Why has that show been such a long-running hit? What about what Shonda Rhimes did, what you two did, your fellow producers did, that has made this show a sensational hit, good times and bad times?
Well, it's the characters. It's similar to Council of Dads in that it's friends as family. You know, it's people creating their own families out of their friendships, and it's interesting characters who are put in really difficult situations, and we watch them struggle and thrive and survive. You know, it's the only difference is there's no surgery here, but it's just full that we find interesting in our own lives and minding that for drama and putting them in interesting situations. And I just think that, you know, Shonda taught us so much about, it's funny, when we started on Grey's, I was much darker. You know, my ideas were always like, let's kill everyone, you know, sort of the dark ideas in the room. And she was really instrumental in showing us how to add humor, how to give these characters lighter moments so that you can absorb the darker moments. And those lessons, I feel like our time on Grey's Anatomy was like, you know, our college and our graduate school in learning how to write, dramatic characters. And so we just, you know, continue doing what we do.
I think the other thing that Grey's was great at and still is great at is that you've got a bunch of actors on that show who can do comedy and drama and can toggle back and forth between them effortlessly. And that is rare. And so I think that's why people fell in love with the show and fell in love with those characters so fully, is they felt very human. And even though the situations might've been a little heightened, they were all grounded in some kind of reality. So, you know, I would regularly encounter doctors and nurses who would braid me for various things that we'd gotten wrong on the show, but at the same time say, there's so much that you get right on the show, and I'm a huge fan. So that was always really rewarding.
What are some of the early episodes of Council dealing with? What kind of family issues or family problems do the Council deal with? Or does the Council deal with?
Well, I think that one of the early issues is there's a teenage son who in very simple terms, needs to learn how to drive. And the mom and the dad are struggling with the dad's illness, and one of the dads steps in to teach him to learn how to drive. And that the kid doesn't want to learn from this stranger, but at the same time is kind of compelled to. And you see this great moment of these two characters coming together over something as simple as that, as learning to drive or tying a tie, or you know, one of the daughters is adopted and makes a play to reach out to, through a 23andMe like genetic test, finds a distant cousin living somewhat nearby, and goes to make contact with her because she feels like her family is kind of coming apart. And so she goes and meets this cousin and realizes that they kind of don't have anything in common, and is rescued by one of the dads and brought back home, and realizes that no, even though her family is going through a hard time, that she's surrounded by a lot of love. So I think that, you know.
The other thing that we are really excited to show is the season one will take place over a course of about a year. And in that year, we want to show Robin, Sarah Wayne Callies, the mom, begin to, you know, open herself up to relationships and love again. And we've been talking to a lot of younger widows, you know, people who are whose husbands have died at a young age, you know, they're about what it's like to start dating again. And, you know, that's another thing we're bringing from Grays, you know, this sort of beautiful tradition of wonderful romantic relationships. We want to infuse Council of Dads with love and joy and hope and longing and all those good things.
Before we go, how are you and Tony dealing with the coronavirus, and your colleagues dealing with the coronavirus? What kind of ads are you taking now?
Look, I mean, we're all working from home. NBC has been a real, you know, partner and leader in sort of taking all of the necessary precautions. We're working from home. We're doing everything we can to support our actors and our crew and our posts, and we're like everybody else. We're taking it day to day, and
it's interesting though, because the issues of the show are very much brought into relief with what's going on now. Just how all of us now are leaning on our families and leaning on our extended families in terms of close friends and things like that, and working together to get through this crisis. And I think it's in these times that you really see the best of people come out.
Absolutely. Council of Dads, NBC's newest drama series. It premieres next Tuesday night on your local NBC station, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, right after the season finale of This Is Us. Again, check your local for the NBC station in your area. For more details about the program online, NBC.com. That's NBC.com for Council of Dads, premiering next Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Tony Phelan, Tony Rader, the executive producers and key writer, developers of the series, thank you both for coming on. Good luck with the series. Hopefully a long run in store. It's a pleasure to have you both with us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, both of you. Take care. Enjoy. Tony Phelan and Joan Rader joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, we're going back to Los Angeles, and this time we're speaking with one of the executive producers of the return of Top Chef on Bravo. That's a sister network of NBC Universal. Top Chef All-Stars from Los Angeles, where 15 chefs get the opportunity at a second chance at big money, in this case, $250,000. Executive producer Bernie Arquinez will join us live after we pause near the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to Best Internet Radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneIn.com. More than 40 million listeners through all three networks combined around the world every month and growing. Don't forget BTR and Spreaker, your home for close-up radio. Check it out Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. I believe that the coronavirus will be a key topic there. That's close-up radio Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Don't forget, that's BTR and Spreaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Barbie Televised. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, our regular time period, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Delighted to have you here for the program All About Television. 46 degrees at the top of the hour. Some more great stuff happening your way in the next half hour and change. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. So make the phone call and be interactive with us. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Chat room is in business. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you. And don't forget, while the program is on, you can connect up by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or tune in screen, follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Blog Talk Live brought to you by Audible.com. You'll hear from them a little later on in this half hour. Well, all along, we have been trying to get a particular show on Bravo on this program, and I'm delighted to say in the next few minutes, we will. I'm talking about Top Chef. It's one of the most popular shows of its kind on television. It's become a trendsetter like Bravo did with fashion with Project Runway. And Bravo will be starting its 17th season of Top Chef All-Stars format this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Joining us live from Los Angeles, executive producer Darnene Artinez. Darnene, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. So how's everybody prepping for season 17, another All-Stars turn?
Well, we're still very busy in post. We're figuring and finishing up the show, but it's coming along really well.
When do you determine that it's time for an All-Stars? Is there some sort of rationale that you and your fellow producer, Magical Elves, the producers of Top Chef, say, okay, it's time for All-Stars. It's time to bring back people that the fans have chosen as their favorites, given social media, given email, given phone calls. They deserve a second chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the first time we did All-Stars was really successful. We had a lot of fun that season and did a lot of great challenges. And I think the chefs were ready to compete again. And also the audience was looking for one, you know, it's been a while. I think it was time. It kind of naturally happened.
Now, what can make this All-Stars unique in your mind?
That's a good question. I think because it has been so long and, you know, we've been to, you know, we've shot in Los Angeles before, we've shot in California before, and then we're back in LA again, really trying to figure out how to make the challenges new and different and still exciting for the chefs. It's been a big part of what I think made this upcoming season really successful.
And the big prize for one of these 15 chefs is $250,000, a.k.a. $250,000. Am I saying it right that this is the largest prize that's been offered for a culinary or for any reality competition like this?
Definitely not for any reality competition, but for Top Chef, yes. You know, there's obviously like $1 million on Survivor and $2 million for their All-Stars version they're doing right now, Winners at War. But this is the most for sure that we've done for Top Chef.
So how do you pick how do you and your fellow producers pick the 15 that become All-Stars?
That's a good question. It's kind of a combination. You know, we kind of checked in with everybody to see who would be interested in coming back if we were doing an All-Star season, to kind of just gauge the temperature of who's interested in competing. And then, you know, we wanted to really lean heavily into the finalists, the chefs who got really close to winning but just didn't get there, to give them kind of, you know, a second shot. And then also some competitors who, you know, showed strong in the beginning but didn't make it maybe to the finals, but we could tell, you know, were really talented and deserved another shot. So it's kind of a mix.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a mix in terms of graphical representation, geography. You've got people from Boston and Washington, Atlanta and Portland and San Fran and Charlotte, North Carolina and New York and my home borough, Brooklyn. And you also have at least three people mm-hmm. who actually this is their third go-round. They were on initial
yes.
season. They were on the season after our previous All-Stars, and now they're back for a third time. Was there any sort of discussion among your producers about should we give them a third shot?
kind of come down to, you know, wanting people who are really competitive and have gone to a new place in their careers and are looking to show America something else about themselves, you know. That's the kind of the nice thing about, you know, it's been almost a decade since the last All-Star season, and, you know, a lot's changed in people's lives and their careers, and so we kind of wanted to show that.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the longest-running shows of its genre, the cooking competition. And sometimes you've had a lot of competition in that genre, sometimes little. And why do you think this series has lasted as long as it has and seems to keep growing its audience over the years?
I think it has a lot to do with the talent. I think that the more, you know, like, we, you know, from where we started to where we are today, the more, like, more chefs now are interested in competing on the show, and who are very talented. And a lot of times, you know, when we first started, we were doing open casting calls, which we still do to an extent, but for the most part, casting is done through referrals from, you know, guest judges to past contestants to people who really know who's good. And that comes across, I think. And then the chefs after the show, you know, are, have gone on to do some great things. They're nominated for awards. They've got cookbooks. They're opening restaurants. You know, there's a lot happening. So you're able to kind of see your, you know, like, and part to what you're saying about diversity and geography, you know, you kind of see your local chef go and compete on the show, and then you get to go and eat the food. And so that kind of plays into it too. So it's all of that.
We're speaking with executive producer Janine Akinez. She is part of Top Chef, the long-running series on Bravo, which now goes into season 17 this Thursday night with its latest All-Stars format from Los Angeles. Top Chef will be on Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, and we're speaking with Janine live from L.A. This half hour on Tomorrow will be televised. So I'm having with you live from the other side of the United States, namely New York, where it's 46 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you with us, no matter where you are, and I hope you're safe and sound, dealing with the coronavirus as powerfully as possible. And thank you for tuning in to the program All About Television. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make the phone ring 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We're back at our regular time period on Friday, end of the week. And among our guests, we'll have the co-founder and chief executive author of what could be a new way to get TV shows off the ground with viewers funding them. It's called Rivet TV. It will premiere on March 24th with three pilots, all of which, who viewed the program, will have an opportunity to fund. Wade Bradley is the co-founder and chief executive of the venture, and you'll hear him in an exclusive interview Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. And we're also working on one, possibly two, additional guests from some major new shows premiering later this week on Hulu and Netflix. So stay tuned to our Twitter feed, UBC Simon TVBT, for all the details. And join us, like I said, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. It could be a very exciting 60 or 90-minute episode. But for sure, we will have Wade Bradley from Rivet TV. I've had a chance to read about what they're up to. It could be a very exciting new way to get TV programs on the air. Janine, with the history of Top Chef, how tough is it now to come up with the challenges that these chefs have to do?
You know, it's funny because it is definitely difficult because you want it to be, you know, new and fresh and different. But I will say being able to travel the show from city to city has really helped keep things fresh because, you know, each city brings its own dynamic to the challenges and it makes it a little bit easier in terms of coming up with things that are new.
Mm-hmm. For those who haven't seen the show, and there are some people that may be listening to us and have not seen Top Chef, how does Top Chef work? How does each episode work?
Well, we start with a quick fire challenge, which is kind of our short challenge in the kitchen. And usually those tend to be skills-based or kind of fun, you know, not necessarily super serious. And whoever wins those quick fire challenges then can earn immunity or some sort of prize or advantage in the elimination challenge. And then we move on to an elimination challenge, which is a much larger full-scale, usually event or, you know, private dining situation where the chefs have a little more time and are allowed to go, you know, shopping to really kind of create whatever they want to create for the challenge. and then, you know, either serve it to 200 people or to 10 people, depending on what the challenge is. And then at the end of every episode, somebody is crowned the winner of that challenge or is eliminated.
Mm-hmm. And how do you come up with the challenges? How long is it? Do you have, like, every week a strategy session that suggests, okay, here's a possibility here, let's do this and let's do that? Who makes the call, and how often do you determine what challenges you do and what episode they run in?
Yeah, well, we have a challenge team, actually. So when we decide where we're going for the season, we all are in pre-production, and we brainstorm challenge ideas, you know, come up with a ton of ideas, and kind of hone in on the ones that we all as a group like the most, and we pitch them internally, and then pitch them up to the network and see which ones they like. And then we kind of, you know, try and put them in place where sometimes it could be based on the date and, like, when something's happening. So, for instance, you know, when we were in Kentucky last year, we had a Kentucky Derby challenge, and it was actually the week before the Derby, so, or the week after the Derby. So it was, like, kind of timing based on the location's timing, but it could also be, you know, we try and spread out large challenges and smaller challenges so that there's, like, a mix. And then also a mixture of team challenges and individual challenges. So it's all kind of weighing all of those pieces and what flows the best. And hopefully building to harder challenges as the season goes on.
Do you have an example of a challenge that was proposed, let's say, one season, didn't happen that season, and then a season or two later, boom, the chefs get confronted with it?
I know that's happened, but let me think about that. I don't know. I can't remember exactly a challenge, but for sure that happens because we, you know, we keep all of our documents, obviously, and then if there's something that we liked, we didn't have room for, you know, we might hold it over and try and tweak it for the next season. I'm trying to think of one specifically, a good example. I don't know if that
well,
was, sorry.
That's okay. I mean, by the way, are there certain challenges that the chefs find easier, let's say a certain classification of challenge, that the chefs find either harder generally or easier?
Yeah. And I think it kind of depends on the chef, but I have heard from them that they actually like the challenges that are more specific. Rather than, like, it's open and you can make whatever you want. They like to be told kind of what they have to do because then it gives them some sort of guideline to work within. But if the challenge is, you know, make your favorite whatever and it can be anything, then it's a little bit harder to, like, narrow it down as to what they want to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah. One of the fun things about Top Chef is that from the get-go you have had the top cast of characters. Padma Lashimi is the host. Tom Colicchio as the head judge, Gail Sim is one of the judges. How do they keep enthusiastic about each season? Because they've been at this now for a long time. This is season 17, after all. So how does Padma, how does Tom, how does Gail, how do they keep their enthusiasm? How do they keep the wits about them from season to season?
That's a good question. I think you might have to ask them specifically, but from my perspective, I think that it's helped that we are only shooting one season a year. And so when we come together, it's kind of like we all talk about it being like Top Chef summer camp. And so, you know, you're kind of coming together with your family once a year to, like, be together for 6 to 8 weeks and have fun and work really hard. And I think that we're all just focused on what we're doing, that it's like, and it's like that one time a year that we all come together to do this thing. So it's kind of a nice. And I think that helps keep the enthusiasm up.
Yeah. And how close to air date do you film each episode? Is it pretty close? We have to really hit a deadline, like, you know, and sometimes wonder, are we going to make it? You know, when Bravo tells us this show goes on at 10 o'clock this Thursday, do we make this or not?
Oh, I don't think we've ever had that worry before, but it's, you know, it kind of depends on the year and when everything's happening, but we tend to shoot a few months before it hits air, so we definitely have time to get everything in order.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a personal favorite before season 17. Do you have a personal favorite chef or a personal favorite challenge?
Well, I definitely, you know, we always talk about this challenge and how it played out. It was a very simple one, but it was in Top Chef Texas when we had Charlize Theron as a guest judge, and it was actually to help promote, you know, Snow White and the Huntsman, and it was just very simple, straightforward challenge, create a dish fit for an evil queen, and it was, they were only feeding our judges, Charlize and Eric Repair, and the creativity that our chefs showed in that challenge really made that challenge, and I think, you know, any challenge can be a great challenge, but it's what the chefs bring to it that makes it great. And I think that they brought something really cool to that challenge.
Now, by the way, I can't let you go without asking about this. Like, what is great food for an evil queen? What would she like the most?
Well, she was a fan of the show, so she liked, and she was very enthusiastic about all of it. And they had, you know, there was, I think somebody put like beet juice on a glove and then put like, made it look like a bloody handprint on the plate, you know, and it was like gross, but also cool. So, and there was like a black chicken with like a claw, you know, so there's all kinds of, there was all kinds of interesting things. It was just very creative.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are certain cuisine that gets used more often than not? Let's say Asian cuisine versus European cuisine versus African or Pan-African cuisine that pops up, that mm-hmm. that the chefs like to tap into.
Yeah, I think, like, obviously New American is a very popular go-to. I think that's something that people use a lot. Definitely a lot of – we're seeing a lot more Asian flavors in the last decade. We are seeing more African cuisine on the show now. That wasn't always the case. And then the other thing, we do see a lot of, I feel like we've been seeing a lot of Southern cuisine on the show as well. And that has to do with a little bit of us being in Charleston and then Kentucky in the last couple of seasons. So it kind of depends.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, Top Chef in its run not only won the Emmy Award in the area of unscripted television, but also won the James Beard Award, which is probably the Emmy, the Peabody, the Oscar of the cooking culinary world. So when you get both, you know you have a very special show, and Top Chef certainly is. Going into its 17th season and its latest all-star season this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on Bravo. We've got executive producer Denise Martinez live from Los Angeles with us, where the new all-star edition takes place. And we'll have more from her in a moment. And if you have a question or comment for her, well, make the call and make your voice known. 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And for those of you dealing with the coronavirus, we hope that you take some time and let us be of service to you. All of our episodes this year and previous years are available to you on podcast anytime you like. So check us out on iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. When you go to TuneIn or iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click, and then you get our episodes. It is a great way to spend the time. We have a lot of great guests we've had this year already and in previous years. So check out our show and also check out other Blog Talk Radio programs as well. Let's be part of your day even more as we're all powerfully dealing with this virus. And we will lick this, folks. We are licking this. So keep that in mind. And by the way, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, IR Radio will be filling the airwaves, I'm sure, as the days go on, with all the latest coronavirus information as well as health tips to keep you safe and sound. Nene, I know that unfortunately there's some disappointment because the premiere of this show was supposed to tie in with a festival that was supposed to take place, the Food and Wine Festival in Los Angeles, Universal Studios Hollywood. Can you bring us up to date on the status of that event?
I actually don't know what the current status of that event is, but I do know that it's been postponed. It is a bummer. I know everybody was really looking forward to it, and all the chefs are planning on coming out and being a part of it. So hopefully it can just happen, you know, a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. And something else also is that a couple months ago, Bravo and teamed up with Spectra to actually put together a restaurant called Quickfire. It opened in Philadelphia. Can you tell us anything about that and how that was doing prior to the coronavirus?
Unfortunately, sorry, I'm not involved in the restaurant portion of it, but But yeah, I've heard good things. I know that Eddie, who's a chef that competed last season in Kentucky, who's from Philadelphia, was the one really developing the menu. So I heard good things, but I have not been able to check it out myself.
Well, we hope, obviously, that this coronavirus situation passes sooner than later so that both the restaurant can reopen and also that that festival that was supposed to take place this Thursday and Friday from Universal Studios Hollywood can, in fact, happen. And I'm happy to hear that it's been postponed, not canceled. So that's great to know. Is there a particular challenge that you are looking forward to seeing these chefs go through in this particular season?
Oh, you know, I always love restaurant wars, so that was a big one for us. I'm excited about that. Excited about that one. You know, we have a couple of fun ones coming up. I don't want to give anything away, but I definitely think that that it's going to be a great season. There's a lot of fun challenges. The chefs had a lot of really fun with them, I think. And then, you know, and it's been announced, we went to Italy for our finale for the first time ever. We went to Europe, and it's a bummer that what's happening over there right now, but we were there this past October filming, and it was fantastic.
I asked our guests from Council of Dance this in the last half hour. I'll ask you as well, because you're involved with Magical Elves, a fantastic production company. They've been one of the great producers of unscripted television, competition television. How is everybody at Magical dealing with this coronavirus crisis?
Really well, actually. Most everybody is working from home if they can. And, you know, we're just trying to keep everybody separated. And, you know, unfortunately, I know a lot of people are, their productions are on hold, and we're just kind of waiting for this to pass.
Incidentally, going back to Top Chef Quickfire, there's a very interesting story behind this because one of the past contestants actually was consulting to this location. It was Eddie Conrad. He was in the last season of Top Chef, and apparently he's involved with this. Mm-hmm. And also, there was another quick fire that was at SeatGeek Stadium, started about 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not really involved in the restaurants, but I have heard that they're successful, and the fact that it's the second one, I think that's a good sign.
Love to see one in New York. Once we get through this, I'd love to see a. I'll tell you, I think this will work in New York as well as up and down the East Coast. These kind of quick fire restaurants.
Oh, for sure.
By the way,
yeah.
Given the interest in food trucks, has Top Chef ever considered doing a challenge involving a food truck or involving food truck food?
We have done challenges with food trucks actually, and they're always a lot of fun. Because it's, you know, tight quarters, and you got to feed a lot of people.
Exactly. Denise, how did you get involved with Top Chef? Had you done other unscripted or competition television before? What brought you into the Top Chef fold?
No, actually, you know, luckily enough for me, it was my first job out of college. When I moved to Los Angeles, I got a job as a PA on season one. And I've just grown with the show, you know, over the last 15 years.
And how have you grown from being a production assistant to where you are now, where you're one of the people that actually oversees the show and makes sure it gets on Bravo?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, from season to season, I constantly was interested in learning more, wanting to do more, and made it known that I wanted to do more. And I think I just, you know, got lucky and was able to move up as the years progressed and been able to contribute to, you know, I came up through the challenge side of things. So helping to come up with creative and locking locations and all that stuff and guest judges and all that. So I was able to kind of really grow with the show and learn and do more as it progressed. And by, the end of season 12, I was running it, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And has the series, not only for you, but for everyone else involved, has it improved your culinary skills? Are there, let's say, certain things you've done as a chef or tried to do that were inspired by your work on the series?
I don't think it's improved my cooking skills, but it's definitely improved my palate. I think I was a very picky eater before I started working on the show. And the more and more that I've worked and traveled and tried new things, the more it's opened up my palate to things. I'm not a big cook, but I do love to eat out.
And on that Colette expanding note, we will leave it there. But before we do, we'll let you know that the new season of Top Chef, the newest All-Star season, and season 17 overall, it begins this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time on Bravo. Check the locals where Bravo is available on your area and in your area via cable and satellite. For more details about the promo online, go to www.bravotv.com. That's www.bravotv.com. Top Chef All-Stars, latest edition, this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time on Bravo. Zanine Martinez, executive producer of the series, thank you for joining us. Good luck with the new season. Hopefully many, many more to come. It's an Emmy and James Beard Award winner, and deservedly so. And we're delighted you're with us today, and all the very best to you. And again, we are going to lift this coronavirus situation for all the better, and we really appreciate you being a bond.
Thanks for having me.
Zanine, take care. All the way to stay safe and sound.
You too. All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Zanine Martinez, executive producer of Top Chef All-Stars, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, new season premieres this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on Bravo. And for details online, bravotv.com. Let's not be televised coming away, but first some words from our fine sponsor at audible.com. You know, with the coronavirus situation hitting us as it is, this is a great time, a bigger time than ever, to discover the theater of the mind, the theater of your imagination, the theater of sound, a kind of experience you can only get through such ventures as audible.com. And if you're looking for a great way to start your experiment in sound, particularly in these times that we could all use some entertainment inspiration, well, how about trying out this audiobook called Things You Save in the Fire by Catherine Center. Trust me, it's not just a fire story. There's a lot more to it. It's very inspirational as well. Things You Save in the Fire by Catherine Center. And it can be one of the three audiobooks that you can order right now from audible.com. You know, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and very much so, inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. And all you have to do to get your sound journey going is to sign up at this website, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And when you do, you don't get just one free audiobook for a one-month trial, or two, you get three. And here's the thing. Two of those free audiobooks are from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater from around the country and around the world, and great performances. One woman and one man. And I promise you, it'll definitely be worth a big listen. So, hear for yourself today how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. And boy, do we need it now. So, you can give it as a gift for yourself or give it for others you love. And I'm sure in these times, they'll really, really appreciate it. So, check out audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Check it out today. When we come back, one more comment about these coronavirus TV times. But first, we're going to pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneInRadio.com. Your home for the best in internet radio around. Together, reaching more than 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Stay tuned to Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio for the update, latest information, and facts about the coronavirus and what you can do to deal with it and deal with it powerfully. And also, don't forget that coming up tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern and 4 p.m. Pacific, it's Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. I'm sure they'll bring up coronavirus as well. Straight Talk with Dean and Mark, that's tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, Best Beats are available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvin Televised with you for a few more minutes. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Again, want to welcome those of you that may have joined us at the top of the hour. Our normal starting time of 3 p.m. in the Pacific, because of our earlier guest from Council of Death, we got started a half hour earlier than normal. We'll be back in our regular time period on Friday. So since we have some extra time, we're going to do a comment, but also So let's try one more time for those of you who came in late at the top of the hour with our classic trivia question of the week. And if you first put the correct answer, you can win a terrific book that we featured on this program about 3 years ago called On the Front Line of the Television War, a legendary war cameraman in Vietnam. On the program, we had Tony Hirashiki, who was that Vietnam War cameraman. We had Terry Irving, the editor of the book. And by the way, the book has an introduction by Ted Koppel. Cashmere Publisher, Casemate Publishers, are the people involved. And here's our question that we first posed a week ago. What was the Dick Van Dyke Show's original name? What was the Dick Van Dyke Show's original name? It was not the Dick Van Dyke Show. In fact, Carl Reiner, the creator of the show, actually starred in a pilot made for CBS under another name before 1961 when the series premiered. That's our question. What was the Dick Van Dyke Show's original name? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you are emailing from. And if you first get the correct answer, you will win on the front line of the television war. If you came in late, we will repeat the question tomorrow morning, if we don't get a winner today, our wonderful Facebook page, Simon Applebaum by name, or on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. And just to let you know, as long as the post office remains open, we will continue our classic trivia question segment. As far as we know, the post offices around the country have not been impacted by the coronavirus. That's really sensational news. And as long as that continues, we will continue the classic trivia question segment for those of you that may have had that question raised. So once again, if you know the answer to our question posed today, email me ASAP. That's how it works. First correct answer wins. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full name and address. And if you miss the question, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook under Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So get involved. Get interactive with us. And all the very best. And now a comment. The last 7 days have been very confronting for this world of television, this world that I've been very privileged to observe, follow, and write about, and sound off about for more than 40 years. In the last 7 days, because of the ongoing and expanding coronavirus, practically every television show in production, whether for the broadcast networks, the cable networks, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, has been suspended at least for several weeks. Shows that were going to be put in production, including new seasons of programs, including those on Apple TV+, Disney+, etc., they've been taken out of play temporarily. We've seen most of the weekday syndicated talk variety shows either stay on with no live audience or suspended indefinitely. And we've seen all the late-night talk shows after a disastrous couple of days last week with no live audience, out of play, out of production. We've seen a presidential debate taken this last night from Phoenix, Arizona, moved to CNN's Washington, D.C. headquarters, no live audience, no spin room, no follow-up. We've seen every major sports event either canceled or postponed. Every professional sports league, the new XFL, the Masters golf tournament postponed, regular seasons halted, PGA golf tournament events canceled up to the Masters, and who knows when the season is going to renew or come back, or if we're going to have regular season at all. And, of course, this was going to be the start of March Madness. No March Madness, and no even conference tournaments completed, if they weren't completed by late last week. It's a very sobering time. Who would have thunk, even in times of an earthquake, in times of 9/11, in times of other medical emergencies like swine flu and Ebola, that we would ever see the television world that we've come to know impacted in such a dramatic, expansive, and profound way. And for me personally, it hasn't been just my ability to cover television. It's been other things in my life, like ballroom dancing and other aspects, and just being with people. And I've had to personally get off it and 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 off it over and over and over and over again. If there's a message I want to leave you with today, it's this. Yes, we can be in a panic. Yes, we can be cynical. Yes, we can play blame game. Yes, we can feel helpless. And it doesn't work out that way. Try this on. Each and every day will bring us one step closer to the reduction and ultimately the eradication of this virus. And one thing to keep top of mind is, as bad as things are, and I don't want to minimize the casualties to this point, but keep in mind that compared to China and South Korea and Iran, France, and other parts of Europe, we are nowhere near the catastrophe that these countries either have endured or are enduring. At this point, as I say this, we've had over 60 deaths. They're all regrettable. And condolences to all the families that are suffering with their loss. And nearly 4,000 people who have contracted the disease in all sorts of ways. And that is nowhere near what Italy and other countries are dealing with. Nowhere near. So we are doing something right. We are doing something important that is curtailing what this country is dealing with. And that does give me hope. And it's great to see that a lot of people are banding together. The current presidential administration, Congress, the doctor, scientific and medical community, corporate America, state and local government leaders, everybody is working 24/7 to get this licked. And it is licking. We are licking this. And I invite you to consider that we are getting closer and closer to getting this horrendous condition reduced and ultimately eradicated. It may not look at the times, and it is. And we will see television production. We will see sports. We will see everything we've come to know about TV get back to normal or something close. And it's really, really critical that we operate out of power, living powerfully, staying safe, being sound. If there's something I really fear, it's this fear of social disassociation or social dislocation, whatever you want to call it, being the norm. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't work for me in the long run. So wherever you are, let's come together and let's lick this virus. Just like we did 9/11, just like we did Ebola, just like we did swine flu, just like we did polio way back when. And I invite us all to really come together and do our part. Yes, it hurts. Yes, it's a stomach punch. And we're going to come out better for it. This country always has. This world always has. And the time to start is now. And I want you also to know that we will continue to do our thing to cover this world of television, coronavirus situations included, as best we can. And I also want you to know that I'm very deeply sure that everyone at Blog Talk Radio, at Spreaker, at TuneIn Radio, at iHeartRadio, radio networks and radio stations across the country, podcasters across the country. I'm going to do our bit to inspire you, to motivate you, to entertain you, to keep you informed, and to be even more a part of your life than ever. And so doing, we can get through this. So I really appreciate your listening more than ever. And we're licking this. And we will do whatever we have to do to keep our society on the track of licking this and coming out on the other side of the tunnel far better and far greater. And I invite you to join me along the way, starting now. With that, that will do it for today's edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Thank you for being here. I want to thank again our wonderful guests, Tony Phelan and Joan Rader from Council of Dads. Remember, that program premieres next Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on your local NBC station right after the season finale of This Is Us. More details online, NBC.com. And again, thanks to Deneen Arquinez, executive producer of Top Chef All-Stars. That premieres its latest season this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time on Bravo. For more details, www.bravotv.com. By the way, one more thing about Council of Dads. On April 30th, the second episode of that series will be played at an earlier time. It will be 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on April 30th. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, we'll focus on the new venture, Vivid TV. It's a venture where you not only can see a new program, but fund it and make sure it stays on the air. Wade Bradley, the co-founder and chief executive officer, will be with us. And we have some other guests we're working on, so stay tuned to our Facebook page and our Twitter feed at UBC Simon WBT for all the details. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we make it so easy for you. And we hope you do take advantage of our library of earlier episodes. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, we're always available 24/7 for you on podcast. So go to iTunes.com, go to Apple TV, Spreaker's podcast app, TuneIn.com, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. We love to hear from you, now more than ever. So let me hear what you think. What's your thoughts on how you're coping with the coronavirus? How is TV making a difference in how you're dealing with that virus for you and your family and your loved ones? And what are your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? Love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, that's how you get involved in our class trivia question of the week. And it's also how you get involved in our regular feature we call a show to know. Is there a TV show you like that deserves attention? Well, we want to give it that attention, and we need your support. So let us know. Email me with the thought, and if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. Incidentally, one show to know that we hope some of you may watch tonight is the new HBO miniseries, The Plot Against America. It has a great all-star cast, including Winona Ryder and John Turturro. It is produced by David Simon and Ed Burns from The Wire fame. And we hope to maybe get one of the people in the making of the show on our program not too far down the road. So we're working on that possibility as well. Plot Against America premieres tonight on HBO. More details, HBO.com. So again, if you have an idea for a show to know, or if you have an answer for our country question, make sure you put in an email, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and your full name address, and we give you the full credit for your situation. Again, we always love hearing from you. So in addition to our email, find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. By the way, we will update our Twitter feed with new news as we go on the coronavirus, how it's impacting television. We have about 720 followers right now. We'd love to have you join in. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. And we'd love to hear from you anytime you like, either by email or social media. Remember, we always love hearing what you have to say, and we do respond within 24 hours. Why? Because now more than ever, what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not only those of Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate of Block Talk Radio is Candace Williams. Annie Toad's Block Talk Radio's general manager, and Jay Sonnenberg is executive content producer. The co-founders of Block Talk Radio are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Mobby Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial, absolutely gratis, with three free audiobooks, two from the growing catalog of Audible Originals, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift, no matter more than ever, for you, someone you love, or others around you. For Mobby Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. Please be safe, be sound, whatever you need to do to deal with the scroll virus, please do it. Invite your loved ones to do it too. We'll be back on Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, the TuneIn folks, TuneIn Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Remember, whatever you're up to now and then, please, more than ever, make it safe, make it great, and stay sound. Until the next time, stay well. And stay tuned.